and taking care of our planet and the environment and the regeneration, people like you and me and everyone who cares about what's going on with our planet. So it's good to see you again, Eddie.
Hi, aloha everyone. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You've been busy. You've been very busy.
yeah, I get a little busy sometimes. So I basically wanted to kind of define for everyone what we mean by the regeneration.
Yeah.
You hear of a generation spoken of as in a term, the baby boomers, the millennials and such.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about a generation that's not defined by age, that's actually defined by our actions? Sort of scene five, take two. How are you going to act? What are we going to do? We're at a point in time where we know there's been a lot of damage through the last 100, 200 years to our environment, to our bodies, to everything having to do. So what about a generation that's ready to turn back the clock a little bit, like in the sense of to regenerate the planet? And we use the term regenerative agriculture, which you may be starting to hear a lot more now. And basically what that means, regenerative agriculture, is to make everywhere you plant something better than when you started. So that actually taking into account a forest drops the leaves, it's sort of a circular situation where everything drops to the floors and absorbed to the ground and is eaten by the worms and the other creatures, and you really don't have to fertilize a forest. So let's think about our agricultural being that way, where we really don't have to bring in chemical fertilizers, commercial fertilizers, whether they be chemical or organic, that we're able to actually manage what we have available to us and restore the life that's in the ground and allow us to grow really healthy crops while at the same time sort of protecting our environment.
Well, and you've been doing this for a long time and realized that people like you who really care can find ways to make a difference. And you've seen that difference in lots of ways by educating people in all kinds of walks of life, including children's and parents and people who are out there wanting to see what you can do in your own garden. It's been a beautiful project for you. When did you start reaching out to people and having them go to your place? You have a beautiful site, by the way.
Since I've been sort of reaching out to people since I was a kid, because I realize more people than not really do care, and they don't necessarily have the means or the knowledge. People have been sort of disconnected from nature for many years now,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's through the technological age or just having to work to scratch for a living. We sort of lost contact with nature itself and sort of speaking its language. So I like to kind of joke around and say that I kind of help people sort of speak its language again,
mm-hmm.
And through observation, through consistency, and through patience to allow what's going on around us to unfold.
You brought me some beautiful honey today.
And
I was so, I mean, I love honey. Who doesn't love honey, right? But it was from your own place. You have, you collect honey right on your property, huh?
Yeah, sunlight in a jar.
Sunlight in a jar. I love that.
Yeah.
That could be a song title.
Yeah, so we have some bees, and we have some stewardship over those bees. We take care of them. We don't really take much from them. We're not a commercial honey operation,
mm-hmm.
by no means.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're really taking care of them and you're planting a lot of pollinating plants that you're using for regenerative agriculture, they're thriving as well. So when they're thriving, they do tend to have a little bit of excess honey that you can then take some and share it with your friends and do all sorts of fun projects with it. So I like to be able to give some food away like that.
I love that. Now, you have a place in Maliko, and you have a stand in Lahaina, right? Just outside of Lahaina.
So we have a project going in Maliko. You may have heard it referred to as the Maliko Project. And so for a few years now, we've been sort of cleaning up a mess that's been left by old agricultural companies and the core engineers, the military. There used to be a railroad that used to go over the valley. In the old days,
I remember that, actually, yeah. There's stories about that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of history down there.
Yeah.
So I've been put in a position where I sort of have stewardship over that area. And basically, I've been cleaning it up, cleaning a bunch of the mess that's been left there through, you know, for many years, it was used as a dump. And just the disarray and everything that's happened on Maui, that's just the way it's been. So again, we've had the opportunity to clean it up. And there's a lot of invasive species down there. So what we've been doing is we've been taking out the invasive species, plants and whatnot, and animals as well,
mm-hmm.
and trying to restore some order and balance in the valley. That stream is sort of all the runoff from the top of Mockwell Avenue comes down that gulch.
Really?
Yeah, and from not the greatest decisions in people, bad building sites, planting, a lot of erosion finds its way down into the stream bed. Mm-hmm. And eventually when it floods, that washes right out onto the ocean. So what we've been able to do is sort of clean some of the debris out of the stream bed there, mm-hmm. and allow, when the water does flow, it's actually able to stay within the stream. It doesn't back up onto the land and mm-hmm. cause just major amounts of erosion, sucking soil as well as trash that's accumulated into the valley right out onto the ocean and sort of smothering the reefs.
So it sounds like a backbreaking project. It sounds like that's a lot of work, Eddie.
It's been a lot of work, but I mean, to take something and to set an example that it doesn't really, on the larger scale of things, that it's doable. Mm-hmm. So many of our valleys have just been left with so much trash in them. And if you live here and you've grown up, you know what's going on in the back of some of these valleys.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to be able to come together as communities and clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think
that's one of the things that's actually so important. Taking care of the Aina, you know, is so important. We know this, you know. And yet, you know, there's a moment where you wonder why people don't care more about the Aina. Have you seen what are the trends of why people don't take care not to do things that are going to be harming the earth?
Well, I think right now people need to be educated as to like really simple things. Like if you're using a plastic sponge in your sink, it's shedding little particles out into the water system every time you scrub something.
You told me that last week and I had
no
idea.
So we grow our sponges like loofah sponges.
Wow.
There's little things just like really educating people. But, you know, Hawaii sat within chaos for many, many years. You know, with just westernization coming into the and statehood and everything that happened,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the Native Hawaiians were displaced. We all know that. It's an understatement for me to say that.
Yeah.
So the chaos that exists around it is that the perfect agricultural system that was already in place was disrupted.
Uh-huh.
And giant corporations came in and took over. And so through that chaos, people have sort of lost touch with how it used to be done. So what we need is sort of reminders and a little bit of education that for thousands of years, perhaps, plants have grown here in a perfect agricultural system.
Mm-hmm.
Taro, sugarcane, tea leaf, sweet potato, breadfruit. I'm just using the English names of that so everyone understands them. But all these plants played a super important part of the culture as well as a sustainable agricultural system that was in place. So it's sort of about working with what does grow here so well instead of trying to fight it and grow things that may do better somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
Then actually kind of like gearing our food system towards these Polynesian voyaging plants and things that prosper here.
There's a give and take, and when you give back to the land with a passion like you have, I'm sure you see a lot of wonderful gifts that come back to you from the earth when you are working and tending and caring for the earth. What have been some of the benefits you've received from working closely with the earth?
That's a great question. I just recently have done a podcast within the last couple of years with a Whelp Development Company, and they really wanted to speak about how I see wealth. And I think there's something to be said for the wealth of pulling your own carrot out of the ground and eating it, or growing a piece of taro and watching it grow and create its babies around it and then harvesting it and replanting it. Mm-hmm. There's a journey that's there to be able to feed your children with something that you've grown from the land.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wealth there that I really, my words would really do it no justice. It's not as tangible for me to say to you as to how it feels. And also, we've all been through fields that are straight rows with plastic on the ground and that really don't look too appealing or inviting.
Mm-hmm.
What if our farms looked like gardens, like the Garden of Eden, where when we walked through it, we felt like, wow, this is really restoring the land.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, I feel good about it. I feel good bringing my family here. I feel good eating what comes out of the ground here, because everything that is taken out of the ground tenfold has been put back into the ground. So a long-term sustainable circular system.
I want to give people Eddie Garcia's website. You actually have two websites. And I think it's both interesting with lovely videos about what you are doing. You have tell us about recenters.org site first.
So Regenerative Education Centers, that's recenters.org, because it's too long to say to get people to as a website.
Yeah.
But Regenerative Education Centers is all about supporting regenerative lifestyles, educating people to the impacts that they make, from their sponges in their sink, again, to the coffee cup mm-hmm. that they may or may not bring to the coffee store with them, mm-hmm. or what laundry detergent they use in their or where their swimming pool dumps into. So sort of trying to educate people that we can make a lot of choices that can directly affect our environment around us. So not only that, focusing on regenerative agriculture, a lot of the problems that we've seen here in the Hawaiian Islands have been from not the greatest practices of agriculture, like giant monoculture in a style that had to focus on the bottom line and the dollar and wasn't real focused on putting back into the land or taking care of our environment.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to educate people through regenerative education centers. Our learning centers, we have one on the North Shore and one on the west side of the island as well, towards Loniapoko. These are basically working farms that we bring people in, schools, all walks of life. And we want to give them a hands-on experience so they can see what it's like. If we tell them we're going to take a piece of cardboard and we're going to turn it into dirt, now they realize that all the cardboard in their house and all their bills and paper, that if they do it the right way, they can actually turn it into a nutritious fertilizer that they can feed to their landscape around their house or that they can grow a little garden with.
I never had known that till you mentioned it. I mean, I know you're supposed to recycle your cardboard. I never knew that you could take cardboard and turn it into soil. That blew my mind. I was like, what? So tell me, when you have children come out and learn from your different places that you have, your couple of places, what do you see them get enthusiastic about when they see what you're doing?
Oh, it's really amazing the interest from, I've had kids from 3 years old to 18 years old, as well as all the parents that are there. And it seems like everyone is really, really interested in getting their hands in and looking at the earthworms. And they're really excited to see how an earthworm actually chews a leaf into rich black dirt. And they put two and two together and they're all like, wait a second, all this stuff I'm taking to the dump, that's why they call it green waste, because you're wasting it. So imagine if all your lawn clippings and all the leaves that pile up under the tree mm-hmm. could go in a nice box in the back of your yard, along with a few earthworms, and then your kitchen scraps from your sink, all of your bills, your newspaper, all your cardboard, just by taking the tape off it and taking a few minutes to soften it up and put it in this bin, can actually all be turned into super nutritious black living soil.
Mm, that's an amazing thing. And if you go to that your site, you will see actually pictures of how it works and videos as well. And then the other site you have is livingearthcenter.org.
So that's called livingearthsystems.com.
Oh, system, I'm sorry, livingearthsystems.com.
And the reason it's called Living Earth Systems is that's what we are mimicking. A forest is a living earth system. So trying to incorporate what's under the ground as well as what's above the ground, as above, so below.
Mm.
We don't really hear the term too much in our everyday life, but I'm sure you've heard it around once in a while. Mycelium and mycorrhizal mycelium. This is sort of a web like the movie The Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath us is, if you haven't tilled and a forest is intact and it hasn't been ripped apart and broken, then there's this web underground. Tunnels from earthworms, some of them that are permanent, that go down as far as 20, 30 feet. There's in the inside of these tunnels is fungi and bacteria and different living beneficial microbes that we hear about that actually make, when we hear about living soil or the mm-hmm. soil web, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this whole world that's beneath our feet. And if there's no trees and there's no grass and it's bare dirt with the sun on it, then it's not there. And that means that dirt is escaping into the sky. You'll see it in dust tornadoes disappearing. It's escaping when the rain hits it, washing off the ground, down the ditches, straight into the ocean. What happens is when there is an intact web in place, then it holds the soil on the ground where it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, sunlight basically is sequestered through the living creatures, through the animals and through the trees, through the plants, their photosynthesis, they're actually able to take sunlight and turn it into sugars and pump it down into the ground, which actually feed this web and allow it to provide nutrients for the trees and plants and such.
you are very, very into carbon. More than anyone I know, you're a carbon expert.
I'm a carbon farmer.
You're a carbon farmer, and you've learned a lot, you know, and I didn't know much about carbon, but you have certainly have a passion for carbon. What have you, again, learned from carbon, working with carbon, and how you as an individual can make a difference working with carbon?
The building blocks of all life is carbon. So if we look at what's going on with the atmosphere, you often hear about carbon in the sky, global mm-hmm. warming.
Yeah.
So what do we need to do? We need to pull that carbon out of the sky. And how do we do that? We do that by planting. We do that by planting in a sustainable fashion that the web exists underground as well and allows plants to pull that carbon out of the atmosphere and put it back into the ground where it's been for millions of years. So if you think about all the fossil fuels that we've pulled out of the ground, mm-hmm. we've burned them. Where do you think that smoke is going? That's basically putting the carbon back into the sky. Now, a lot of people aren't really familiar with the fact that before there were oxygen-breathing animals on the planet, mm-hmm. there were planets that actually breathed carbon, and their byproduct was oxygen.
Wow.
So right now, the way it works is sort of with an oxygen living creatures that breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. It used to be the opposite on the planet.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
Wow. So what happened to those plants?
So what happened is all these little bacteria and all these different creatures that actually breathed carbon dioxide instead of oxygen, their numbers got so high that their own waste caused the opposite of a greenhouse effect,
wow.
and now the planet was overwhelmed with oxygen.
Wow.
Thus, the oxygen creatures begin to thrive on the planet.
Wow.
And so we're actually almost in a second sort of an extinction path, if we look at it, that we're creating such carbon into the atmosphere again that it took all these creatures millions of years to sequester out of the atmosphere, put it in the ground in the form of, you know, oil is the one you'll know the best, but the fossil fuels. And now we've, in just a matter of 200 years, burned it and put it back into the sky.
I saw a special yesterday, and I thought of you. I think it was an interesting one. It was about what's going on in the tundra in Russia, where there's the global warming's causing the melting of land that has for years been frozen. But what made me interested is they found these tunnels underneath the tundra that are now filled with tons of carbon under there. I'm going, okay, what do you do? Because they were talking about the problem of what do you do with all this carbon in these tunnels that would get released? What would be the effect of that when you have all this carbon that's now coming out from these underground tunnels as the whole frozen plains there are melting?
Well, I mean, ideally, what we would want to do is we'd want to get our climate back on track and try to actually create more forests and more algae in the ocean that actually sequesters carbon. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't understand that an algae that blooms in the ocean, mm-hmm. through photosynthesis, it sucks up carbon, it builds its body, which is made out of carbon, and then it sinks to the depths of the ocean. And that is actually sequestering carbon.
Mm.
So if you can imagine that going on for millions and millions of years, then in the ice caps, the same thing happened. All this carbon was there and it sunk to the bottom. And now if the planet actually warmed up enough to defrost those polar ice caps, then the amount of carbon that would be released into the atmosphere even surpasses what we're doing here on the planet and our impact.
So that would lead
to a chain reaction of the planet overheating, and then what would happen is probably the other creatures would take over the planet again for a while, and the oxygen breathing creatures would have a hard time. You're talking about millions of years down the road, perhaps.
And
a lot of people have their debate on, are we warming as a trend? Is it simply global warming is because of people? That is regardless to me.
Yeah.
What we really need to see is that our streams are not healthy anymore.
Yeah.
Our oceans are not healthy anymore. Forget whether it's warming or not. What about just stewardship?
Yeah.
We're here to take care of the planet. In doing so, it takes care of us. It offers us a wealth of, you know, that we can prosper in so many ways. And what I don't understand that is not being seen is that we're borrowing it from our great-great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have that right to just destroy it and not take care of it. So that's why I'm so passionate about it, and it's so important to me. Regardless of global warming or not, I know that we need to start taking care of the planet. We're losing species of animals at an alarming rate. We're doing types of agriculture that displace everything, and then we're under the impression that it's feeding the world, and it's not feeding the world. It's contributing to textiles, biofuels, things we don't even know about. So it's just, we really need to educate ourselves, and we need to understand what good, solid agriculture looks like on the planet and how we can learn ways to play our part in it.
Well, I think that's why the children learning this about growing and about the carbon and about the way it works is so important, because many very young people really are concerned. They see what's going on. And it's not, as you said, it's not a nice legacy that we're leaving for them or their children and grandchildren, because we're looking at a crisis situation. I think most people would agree to that we're in a situation that's a crisis situation. We've seen the effects of what's happening with global warming. We've seen the effects on the weather. We've seen the effects on people's health in many ways, you know, because of that as well, because of the fact that we've been eating food that isn't really nutritious, with real nutrition, and the diseases that have come from people who are really starving for nutrition, right? And that's what, you know, you are doing such an important job on this. The regenerative education centers are really giving people a chance to not only be educated, but seeing how it really can work, because I think everyone wants the good for the planet. I think everyone wants the good for our children and our children's children. It's just the way we have to learn it and the process of learning it. And realizing every little bit makes a difference. I love the fact of you talking about the loofah, using a loofah sponge instead of a blue plastic little sponge in your sink. I'd never known it had gotten into little pieces. I think we need to also realize that there are people out there using the term that it's good and organic and healthy when it's not necessarily as good.
Greenwashing.
Is that what it's called? There's a name for it?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of greenwashing. We take disposable cups. We try to help some restaurants and turn them on to better products. Uh-huh. Like, for instance, we did a farm-to-table dinner, and 100% of all the utensils and the plates and the cups, we feed them to the earthworms, and then we actually grow something for the next farm-to-table dinner.
Wow.
Out of that composted material.
Amazing.
And turning restaurants on to, like, hey, you thought this cup was compostable. I have some of these cups that people are calling compostable going on 3 years in some of my compost piles, and they haven't broke down a bit.
Wow.
I have others that are totally broken down in new soil already. So really taking the time to educate ourselves to, like, what we can do about that, I think, mm-hmm. is pretty important.
I think it's very important. You're listening to Eddie Garcia, and this is The Regeneration. He's got some wonderful websites you can go to find out more. One is therecenters.org. You support a lot of things that nonprofits also support with you. I have to ask you about Billabong, because I know you were out there, and it was huge, and it was an amazing event. And Billabong is one of those companies that's a big company, but has gotten very excited about what you're doing.
Yeah, so I've kind of been involved in water sports my whole life. The ocean has been like my main drive. So a lot of what I do on land really affects what happens out in the ocean. And I've been trying to tell people for years that if that big field is empty and you're watching all that red dirt run down the road and go into the ocean, that's going to smother our reefs. So what we are doing with Billabong and a program called the Sea Trees Program, mm-hmm. you can find it on Instagram at Sea Trees, or you can find them on the computer at seatrees.com. And what they do is they do ocean and coastal restoration projects all over the world. They replant mangroves in areas where mangroves are an important part of the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
They actually reseed coral reefs in certain parts of the world, and they're working with several coastal watershed projects. So on the project we have going with Sea Trees, and what we had going with Billabong, is that 1 point from every one of the winning heats would go towards 10 square feet of restoration.
Wow.
On one of our projects, one on the North Shore and also one on the west side of the island as well.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, and the way that works is we're planting native plants. We're taking coastal native plants like milo, lohala, native grasses and different things that actually are known to hold the soil together and are supposed to be thriving in that area. And it kind of helps keep the erosion back and some of that soil out of the streams.
How far in or back do you have to go to have it be effective in doing that?
So there's a lot of work on the upper watersheds, which are referred to as the watershed.
Mm-hmm.
But what starts at the top finds its way to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're not seeing recognized enough really is our coastal areas as a part of that watershed.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the fact that we have highways and asphalt all over the place, some of these asphalt roads go hundreds of feet straight into the mountain with no curve. So water hits it and runs straight down that road,
mm-hmm.
runs into the ditches, and it's not really slowed down by anything.
Mm.
In nature, it would be slowed down by rocks and mm-hmm. plants mostly, and roots would be permeating.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the soil web would allow that water to permeate into the soil and into the water table.
Mm-hmm.
But when we've blocked it all up with asphalt, bad building sites, countless number of things, bad farming that's taken out the vegetation, then it actually just finds its way straight down the mountain and into the ocean,
mm-hmm.
instead of being able to seep into the water table the way it's supposed to.
So you have to do it pretty far up.
You have to do it up, but you also have to do it down low.
Yeah.
Because you can restore the watersheds up in the mountains, and
yeah.
you can plant a lot of stuff, and that's vitally
important.
But
then when it hits the road.
But now let's just say, let's use, for instance, the area between the bypass in Lahaina
uh-huh.
and Laniapoco Beach Park.
Yeah.
Down there on the bottom, and all the roads that go straight up in the mountain there with that long bypass, that is a long straightaway highway.
Yeah.
All that water goes into those cauldrons unencumbered,
uh-huh.
and it just makes its way out to the ocean eventually.
Wow.
So what needs to be happen is you actually have to design fields that the water can spread out on instead of just staying within one ditch all the way to the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and allow the plants to slow the water down and allow the water to actually permeate into the soil, which then also leaves plants growing in that area for the whole summer season, which stops a lot of erosion from dust and sun just beating on the ground.
I don't think any of these culverts or people designing them take that into account at all, do they?
They must, because we have a smart core engineers. I think there's just a lot going on, and maybe sometimes they're not looking at the picture super holistically.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a highways department designing it.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of examples of being able to use plants and such to actually slow the water down and allow it to spread out and manage it a little bit better.
If people... Tell people about your site in Laniapoco area, what you have there, and also what you're doing. I think, is there a stand also you support also by Maliko Gulch?
So we do not have a farm stand at Maliko. That is a project of just restoration, and we bring groups in for education.
Mm-hmm.
But in Laniapoco on the west side of Maui, we have approximately 40 acres that we have stewardship over. And we're basically planting it in a pretty up front and center area to show people what good agriculture looks like,
mm-hmm.
to show people how planting the right, I say the right in my opinion, but the plants that can mitigate erosion, but that are also native and or voyaging plants that
mm-hmm.
also support our culture. There was a thriving agricultural community up there before, and through the cane industry afterwards, they basically ripped it apart. Now there's a lot of fancy houses up there, but we have important agricultural land there.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't see good examples of how to use it, then the same story is going to play out again and again.
You know, there's so much to learn from all of this, of course. And I remind people to go to your sites. And the sites are recenters.org and Living Earth Systems.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that for a second. Recenters.org, that's our nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we can do for education in our community, there's a lot of things we do with that. We also focus on making films with that. So our centers can reach our local community, but then these examples of how this works, we can reach the world with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd invite people to go to recenters.org and check out one of the films that we have on there. It's called The Carbon Story. And it's a real great example of what we mean when we're talking about sequestering carbon from the atmosphere. I think it's a 3-minute film. You might leave it feeling a little bit more knowledgeable about what's going on and what carbon sequestration means and how you can do your part in it.
I think the message I get from you that is so, so valuable is that there are things you can do. You know, a lot of people talk about what's going on with the planet and make it sound like it's pretty much all over, you know, and we only have, 20 more years to, before everything falls apart. And you know, and that's good to wake people up, but I don't hear as much talk as you talk about things that you can do, things we can do that's productive to try to reverse some of the damage done.
Well, yeah, just in your own world, I mean, in your own yard, instead of taking all your yard waste to the dump and wasting it, yeah. What about feeding it to some worms and composting your own cardboard? You've at least taken some pressure off the dump, and now you've built a relationship and you understand how that circle works. You get rid of your food compost, and in the long run, you're going to eat something later on that you're proud of because you took this whole circle into account, and you taught your children, hey, look, check these worms out. We're going to be growing carrots with later on, or we're going to be growing taro with, hopefully later on, with something that would have been trash, and instead we recycled into a circle. So we like to feel like with regenerative education centers that we sort of set the stage to help create ambassadors of stewardship.
Right.
Some of these people are 3 years old, some of them are 80 years old.
Uh-huh.
And so I really want to make sure that with the regeneration, it's not about age, it's about really we need elders. We need people to tell the stories and pass knowledge down. And right now we're on a search for that. And the children are looking for our elders to give us the knowledge of how to do this. So how do we help push that along by starting out a dialogue? We're going to be bringing some amazing people on here through the show as this moves forward. And we're going to be having, you know, other people share their stories, and it might become a little bit more evident to some people how simple it can be. Like, for instance, we don't realize what our clothes are made out of. Most of our clothes are made out of petroleum product and plastic. And if you look in your dryer and you pull the lint screen, imagine how much your dryer puts out every year in the lint screen, right? Uh-huh. So you grab that in the lint, you put that in the garbage somewhere, it still winds up somewhere in the atmosphere, it blows away. But now imagine what your dryer is doing. 10 times the amount of fibers that are coming out in water with no filter that are coming straight out of your washing machine, and a lot of the times going right into the soil because they're not necessarily into a graywater system.
Mm-hmm.
So if we just thought, hey, put a filter on the end of our washing machine, 130,000, well, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of washers here on Maui, all just getting dumped back onto the ground.
Yeah.
Eventually, those microfibers find their way into the ocean. That stuff sits on the side of the road by one of the drainage areas.
Yeah.
A big rain brings it all out in the ocean. So we wonder how these micro particles of plastic get into the ocean.
Yeah.
We think about it as only being plastic bottles and such.
Yeah,
but there's a little bit of everything. And I think it's just common sense. If we can arm people with some knowledge and be like, hey, here's some simple things that you can feel good about.
Yeah. So let's talk about the reefs. Let's talk about coral. Everything you're doing is really, a lot of this really does affect the oceans and what you're working on. And I think people have woken up to the fact that the coral reefs are in danger in a lot of places in the world, right? And we've been seeing the damage that's been done here in Hawaii and here on Maui as well. There are people really trying, that I know they're working very, very hard to try to help save the reef, save the coral. And yet, still a lot of people need to be educated about coral. You work with that. I do have to applaud the Maui Ocean Center, I know, is actually growing coral. And I know you probably know some of these people are trying to work to help what's going on with this runoff into the ocean and the effects and what it causes, right? What have you seen that works with the coral, and what's your take on all that?
Well, I think right now with the farms, really focusing on educating people into not having vertical runs, to plant on contour, to use erosion-controlling plants like vetiver grass along with native plants, that they can actually pay attention to what is draining out onto the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we see a bunch of brown water piled up somewhere and we know it's making its way down, little things that we can do to make a difference on that. So focusing on how what we're doing on land affects what happens out there in the reefs.
Yeah.
In the future, we are working on a program where we're actually going to have a coral restoration center down by the ocean on the west side. We're still a few years out in that with permits and such, but we are working towards having an actual coral gardening center that we can make some impact by actually restoring some coral to some of these reefs that have been damaged.
I like the term coral garden.
Yeah, coral garden.
I do. No, because I mean, I think of coral, but I don't necessarily think of it as a coral garden, but it gives such a beautiful visual, doesn't it?
Mm.
About some people still don't even know that coral's alive, you know, and they go out in the ocean, they're not even aware that they're stepping on a living thing and killing it, right?
Yeah, so I try to tell people just out when they're surfing, you know, don't step on the bottom.
Yeah.
You're putting booties on,
yeah,
and you're stepping on the bottom. Every time you step on it, you kill it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely, it's important to be aware of what's going on and that the ocean, if we are going to play a part in it, we really need to be conscious of how we do it. You see a big push now towards sunscreens.
Yes.
And staying off some of the sunscreens, yeah, that damage the reef.
Right.
It's interesting because a lot of the stores are still selling that. So there's obviously a disconnect with enforcement.
I know.
What's the best way to do it is through education.
Yeah.
When someone really knows, hey, I'm smearing that all over my kids when I'm coming to see Hawaii.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should think about that. I'm actually contributing to these reefs dying. I should be coming here and trying to say, hey, how can I support these islands while I'm here?
And how come they're still for sale when they're illegal?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of disarray. But again, I think it comes right really back down to teaching people. Once mm-hmm. people want to make a difference, and it's not real obvious out there, a lot of people are focusing on the doom and the gloom, and what we really need to be focusing on is the solutions.
Right.
Some of those solutions are right here in front of us.
Yeah.
You know, so like we've talked about before, the worms that I have, the beetle larva.
Let's
that
talk
eats
about
styrofoam.
Worms. I've never met anyone who loves worms more than you love worms. In fact, you have a T-shirt, and I have to say, I love mine. I wore it the other day. It's very comfortable. It looks like it says support global warming, but no, it says support global worming, and there's an infinity sign. If you look closely, it's really made from a worm as an infinity symbol, and I've had to rethink my thoughts about worms after talking to you, but you've actually seen the power of worms firsthand, haven't you?
Yeah, so that's the logo for Living Earth Systems, which is our main company. I've been designing farms all over the world and trying to educate people onto a living earth system. Basically, understanding that a forest feeds itself. What's a huge part of a forest is what's under the ground. A lot of people don't realize there's several species of worms and they all work together. Leaf litter worms, manure worms, beetle larvae, deep-dwelling groundworms that make permanent vertical tunnels, mid-level groundworms that make horizontal temporary tunnels, they all eat each other's poop. They all trade off microbes, bacteria, fungi within their gut, and then they spread it all over the place, on the top surfaces, down deep in the tunnels. And this is what allows actual rock to break down into soil on the lower levels, humic acid that's brought down by the earthworms. Darwin, we all kind of know who Darwin is. He was imprisoned for the last years of his life on his theories of, you know, evolution. So basically, he spent the rest of his life working on earthworms and studying some of the fields and actually recording the numbers of earth that the worms actually moved. And it is astounding, 20 tons of earth in 1 year.
Wow.
In a single field.
Really?
Amazing. So it's called Darwin's Notes on Earthworms. You guys can Google it and you can find that book. Fascinating. One of the books I like to share with people. And what got me on that mindset a little bit, too, just to share with people, like, hey, there are some great minds thinking about worms.
Yeah.
And just how important what goes on under our feet is.
And yet, I've never really heard anyone talk about it before besides you. I mean, it sounds like you have to do a doc. You should do a documentary.
Well, there's a lot of people. It's very popular.
The term
is called vermiculture, which is composting with earthworms.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sort of a little offset of the whole program because I've been working with worms my whole life since I was a small child. And I have branched off because I had earthworms that would chew wood chips. One day I found some beetle larvae. I realized, hey, they chew wood chips too. They ate through a styrofoam container, so I threw them in with some surfboards. They ate the surfboards. I realized later on, wow, I think these things are actually digesting the material because I was growing plants with it.
Mm-hmm.
And through years and years of putting it together, I have a process where I can actually bioremediate epoxy foam. EPS, expanded polystyrene, which is your basic styrofoam that you get with every package in the mail. And when it comes to Hawaii, where's it go? It goes into the dump. No one really recycles it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes up a massive amount of space in the dump.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to find ways where nature already has some of the answers. These bacteria, these larvae have a bacteria in their gut that actually breaks down the petroleum material.
It's amazing.
It's crazy. Styrene is found in fruits, in certain fruits and vegetables. We don't really think about the elements, how things work in the earth, and how things will repeat themselves. You've heard of an oil spill and them trying to treat it with a bacteria or a fungi.
Yeah.
Not much different than that.
Wow.
So being able to entertain the idea that there's some possibilities with this. It's still in the process of several more years of like really crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I don't like the enthusiasm to get ahead of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still working on the process and we're letting bits of it out. We filed for a provisional patent so that it wouldn't get tied up and that other people could also experiment with it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now worms on in Hawaii, obviously we're islands here and we have our own ecosystems, and are you seeing different because of the lava rock? And are you seeing different worms here than you see in other places?
So, yeah, that's an interesting question. Some people could be critical, and they could say, well, there were no earthworms here in Hawaii. I don't believe that to be entirely true. I found the worm that's known about, that's in Bishop Museum and stuff, Hawaiianus, and it's not a very common worm, and there's not much written about it. I do use that worm along with several other worms that were brought here by birds, mm-hmm. by ships, by just people coming here in general.
And
worms will find their way
cows and
anywhere.
Horses.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cows and horses and everything else.
Yeah.
So the worms are here and they're in place. And in my opinion, they do a whole lot more good for the island than they do negative.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, a lot of people you hear about using composting worms,
mm-hmm.
the red wrigglers that I've talked
yeah.
about. So I try to set up worms where they're kind of natural in the environment and they're working with each other to mm-hmm. break down material and build soil.
So are there worms that work under the ocean, in the ocean?
Well, when we're talking about the type of worms I'm talking about, they're actually terrestrial worms.
Yeah.
But I will give you an interesting tidbit of information. One of the way I started working with the worms and really utilizing them is I build a form of aquaponic system where I use the plants to grow in a medium of rock, and then there's fish and other creatures supporting the system.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was really young, about 12 years old, I would put worms in water to see how long they could stay underwater. And if you put a worm in a glass of water with no oxygen, he's dead in 2 hours. I was actually able to put worms in a glass of water with a bubbler, and they lasted for 2 months plus.
Wow.
As long as they had oxygen in the water, I would put algae in certain, and they would actually eat the stuff underwater just the way they did in the ground.
Well, you know where I was going with that, because if they're eating plastic and styrofoam, if it could be used in the ocean to try to clear
well,
up
so
some of the...
Well, so let me clarify. That is a beetle larva that has the ability
to eat
that. So it's not actually a worm.
Oh, okay.
It's a larva stage of a beetle.
Uh-huh.
The common mealworm is a larva, and then it's used in the pet industry when it's a larva, but it hatches out into what's called a darkling beetle,
uh-huh.
one of the most common beetles on the earth.
Really?
So the worms I'm talking about in general are earthworms.
Earthworms, yeah.
So the earthworms, they're specifically set up around earth and plants and
mm-hmm.
roots and that type of stuff that directly revolves around a forested ecosystem, prairie
mm-hmm.
ecosystem, but a growing ecosystem.
There's so many gentlemen farmers here. I don't like that. Gentle people farmers, but they call them gentlemen. I want to be gentle person farmers. But, you know, up in Kula area, how many 2-acre or more areas do you have? You know, and of course, they're supposed to be ag zoned, right? I live up at Wailuku Estates now, and there's tons of people who have very large, expensive homes on a couple of acres, sometimes more, right? And at the same time, I don't know how much as far as farmers are educated in some of these things. And as I hear you talking about this, I'm thinking, boy, wouldn't it be nice if some of the people who aren't full-time farmers but just have that kind of as a prerequisite, dare I say, if they really understood the power of what they could do with the, you know, plants that they have to are pre-required to have some kind of farming going on, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a travesty. For me, not to be too political about it, because it's a can of worms, but the gentleman farmers, and it should be a can of worms, actually.
Right.
So you're taking a 2-acre estate, someone who doesn't live here is planting a few fruit trees, a lawn, covering it in black plastic, and saying, this is agriculture, and I should get agricultural taxes for it. There's a problem with that, I do have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our agricultural lands are disappearing to these gentlemen's estates. And it's hard to find agricultural land now. Why? One of the reasons I do what I do is to show people, hey, the land is worth farming. Don't put a fancy house on it. Farm it. Let's feed our community. Let's keep these agricultural lands in agriculture so that we can. We're only 2 weeks away from starvation here in Hawaii. Unless you know how to fish and hunt and dive, where if you grew up here, no brainer. But there's a lot of folks here who did not grow up in that, and they don't know how to catch a fish or grow their food. So literally, if the barge just stop coming, we really don't have food security here. So it's really important to know that a certain amount of our agricultural lands are actually growing food for our communities. And, you know, I go to any restaurant here, and I would say 99.9% of all the restaurants I go to, it's all from Costco. Where's our local produce? You're coming to Hawaii, you want to eat something that's from here. So it's actually sad that it's going down. And again, education. We need to get more people interested in farming. We need to get more people interested in stewardship and realize that that's what's got to happen. You know, we have to start farming. We have to start making people realize that our agricultural lands are important for agriculture. Because if they're not being used, they're going to be sold off as gentlemen's estates.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's already happened.
Yeah, so I mean, it is pretty much there, sad,
especially
yes.
with the value of those homes now, especially. The homes are going for more money than the ag part of the homes would go for.
Let me throw a note out there to all these gentlemen estate farmers. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be down on you. How about we invite you
to learn,
to be a part of the solution?
Right.
What if you have 2 acres and you're fine on an acre for your house? What about we make an acre available for the community or someone, some farmer in your neighborhood, to actually grow food there and use it for agriculture, regenerative agriculture, that can also serve the environment around you. So you can reach out to us at recenters.org or livingearthsystems.com. And if you want to find a way to make your agricultural land productive for yourself and for your community without having to be out there necessarily working it yourself, give us a call. We have a great network of people who want to farm and want to be good stewards of the land. So perhaps that's a way to engage in a conversation.
And you can learn also how to do it for yourself.
That's right.
Because if anyone doesn't maybe want to do a community thing in their backyard, but at least you can learn yourself how to do it, and it works beautifully. I see sometimes trash cans full of lawn cuttings, you know, completely full, huge trash cans full. And you're saying all of that can be used to put back into that area that you have, you
That's
know.
That's right.
Which is really an important message. I mean, I do want to give out the number you have, 808-446-6897. That's 808-446-6897. Because, you know, we're talking about something that really is important. There's so many people that love our islands and that love Maui. And they love nature in Maui. And yet, there's still so much to learn about the natural way of doing it and the way that does take care of it and the way that furthers it so it doesn't kill it and ruin it for everyone, you know. And I mean, there are some places I think you can learn. Have you heard of anything besides yourself or places that do teach people besides what you do?
So if I could bring some to mind right off the bat, I would. There's a few people I'm working with over here. There's a guy that's called, we do a lot of Instagram stuff, so I just want to reach out to everybody
and let
them know. On Instagram, you can find us at Living Earth Systems. You can find us at recenters.org, the Maliko Project. So we do a lot of stuff on Instagram. Mm-hmm. There's some folks that we're working with right now that do a home food waste that they feed to their earthworms. And if you want to buy earthworms, you can also reach out to Mikey at Mana Microbes. So Mana, M-A-N-A, Microbes. That you can find that on Instagram. I believe they have a website that is called manamicrobesfarms.com. So
they teach you, will they teach you how to use those worms correctly?
So what he's got going and what we're actually working with him here on the west side is we'll do a bucket drop off and pick up, and then we will feed your compost to our earthworms, and at the end of the month, we'll give you a gallon of earthworm casting back that you can throw in your garden and fertilize your plants with. Say you live in an apartment and you don't have the space, or you're not ready to do it in your yard yet, or you don't have the time. We have a few different projects. We have one of them that's a drop-off. We have one of them that's a pickup. We have a premier pickup with more compost dropped off and a farm-to-table box with things from the farm. And we're also implementing a restaurant service.
Oh, I love that.
And that's about being able to take these food scraps and stuff that would be going to the dump, divert it, and feed it to our earthworms. We also feed part of it to our other animals that we have on the farm, too.
What other animals do you
have? So we have a wild boar from a feral pig population program that we use to keep some of the dirt out of the streams. So we'll catch the babies, and then we'll have those available to give away to families for luaus. But we raise them where they're actually servicing the land in a rotational grazing program that we have.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we do sheep, chickens, guinea hens, tortoises, pigs.
Tortoises even.
And then planting things behind them to build the fertility in the soil.
Are there pets or animals that people keep that, like, what about goats? Are there ones that are kind of dangerous for the earth that you have to watch out for?
Well, it's all about managing them. Like, cows get a bad rap. A lot of these animals get a bad rap. You leave them in one place too long, they eat everything down to the bare dirt. Now, imagine you only left them in there a few days. Mm-hmm. They only grazed it enough to stimulate plant growth.
Mm.
And then you put something behind it that grazes a little differently. Mm. Guess what? They all poop. Then you throw the chickens in, who scratch through their poop to get the cockroaches. And then they poop. This whole system all together, this really builds fertility in the land long term.
It's
really
truly
managing
a holistic system.
It is. It's a holistic approach.
Which is a beautiful way that truly everything can work in harmony if it's put into effect. We only have a minute left. I learned so much from talking to you. We want to remind people this is going to be a regular podcast you'll be doing, that people also can go to your podcast site to listen in case they miss some of this on the radio. What is the podcast site?
So the podcast site, we are in a technical difficulty spot with that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be the regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not 100% sure if that is available right now as to the way we've been working with. So we will find out by next week.
Oh, that's good to know. Well, meanwhile, I'll post it on my site.
Yeah, and people will be able to.
Cindy Paulos and my podcast site, because I think this is really important and valuable information. Again, your number is 808-446-6897. And also people can go to your website, recenters.org. And you can go to livingearthsystems.com.
Or on Instagram.
And on Instagram, yes. And it's really some beautiful videos, a lot to learn, a lot of good that comes from the work you're doing, Eddie Garcia. So I say thank you. I mean thank you from the bottom of my heart for the work you're doing for the planet. And I'm sure the planet would thank you, and it does.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Aloha to you.
Aloha.